say that there are areas of life, or areas in this world today, where God is not able. If you look at the passage that we have read together this morning, you see the Syrians speaking in what really was their blindness. And in doing that, they were restricting God in his capacity. They had known defeat, and they now, you could say almost in their stupor, as well as their ignorance, they were saying that God was restricted to the hills. They'd been defeated in the siege of Samaria, and like Jerusalem, Samaria was on a hill. So they thought that the next challenge that would come, that if it was in the valley, then perhaps God would not be able to work there. And in this verse 28, we have encapsulated exactly what God's response was. And it says there, therefore I will deliver all this great multitude into thine hand, and ye shall know that I am the Lord. Ye shall know that I am the Lord. And when we speak to each other as believers, we all believe that when we take this kind of situation and draw a parallel with everyday life, that God is valley, God is the God of the hills. And when you and I are on what we could call the mountaintop, we know he's there. And when everything is just the way that we would want it to be, we don't question his ability then. But our human nature is fickle, and our thinking is fallible, and our understanding is limited. And that being the case, it would be easy today for you or me to think that God is not the God of the valley. That he's not concerned with that which seems to us to be routine, or ordinary, if you want to put it that way. And we could find ourselves in our own mind. Yes, you love the Lord, but couldn't we limit him? Couldn't we think, well, I'm not too sure that he's really concerned for my little concerns. And that would be a mistake for you and I, because the lesson that was going to be taught and was taught here years ago is still very relevant for us today, that he is the Lord. Yes, he's the God of the hills, but he's the God of the valleys. And I think in any congregation, whether it's a smaller one than this, one like this, or one that is bigger, there are always, every week, some people who feel they're in the valley. It may not appear that way, but all the years that I've had of experience have taught me that, to not just go by appearances. And there are so many valleys of doubt, valleys of despair, valleys of disillusionment, valleys of dead-end street in our own lives. Important to remember that God is the God of the valleys. And that is the title this morning as we look at this passage together. The title is, God is also God of the valleys. God is also God of the valleys. As I think of that, I think of myself, and perhaps I can think of other believers too. And the first point is this: the victims in the valley. The victims in the valley. The Syrians, as I mentioned, had a very restricted view of God. Their outlook toward him was narrow. And it's very easy to say, well, we're Christians and faith sees things differently. So it does sometimes. Yes, we know it ought to all the time. But we've lived long enough to know that faith sees things differently sometimes. During this past week, when we listened to the word, we were brought face to face with Christ every night. And there was that word on dedication to the Lord. There were certainly words there on the importance of being in God's house when we can and worshipping. There was certainly made mention of very many different aspects of Christian service, but several times our attention was drawn to the trials, and to the troubles, and to the testings. And certainly, as Reverend Johnson spoke, he assured us that God is God of the valleys. Unbelief can come along to you, Christian, and to me, and can grip our heart. We might be embarrassed or ashamed even to think, well, I don't really believe this. Unbelief has come along, but I know it's a reality. And it can come along, and sometimes it can shock us when it comes, but inevitably, in every Christian life, at some time it comes. Maybe you have doubts today. There's a man I heard say many years ago, far more able preacher than I would be, or indeed that most people would be. And he said, I doubt the man who says he never doubted. So Christian, if you're in the valley today, I'm not suggesting that you stay there, but I'm just simply saying that you're not on your own. The victims here in the valley, in some areas and in ways we can limit him. Think of the challenge of the work. The challenge of the work. God's work is never easy. We don't have revival right now. And you look at the community around here or any other area, you see that it just seems so much, and Christian, you seem so little. But let's look at it another way. In wars, and wars are terrible, but there are wars, and a soldier that is marching against the enemy, if he is convinced that he and his comrades are going to be defeated before they engage, the battle's half lost already. His whole mental mindset, his own mindset concerning this battle is not good for him to be going to engage the enemy. His heart's not there because he doesn't really believe. He's doubting it before he gets involved. Think of the words in the Psalm 102 there. And I would pray for this kind of a mindset, and you could as well. It's verse 13. Thou shalt arise and have mercy upon Zion, for the time to favour her, yea, the set time has come. For thy servants take pleasure in her stones, and favour the dust thereof. So the heathen shall fear the name of the Lord, and all the king of the earth thy glory. When the Lord shall build up Zion, he shall appear in his glory. He will regard the prayer of the destitute, and not despise their prayer. Now, Christian, like me, you've been there. And you've brought your need before him. And have you not come away sometimes and wondered, well, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that anything's going to change. Sometimes God gives the answer we want. And he doesn't. He gives either something else or the grace that we need. And here the psalmist is saying, he will regard the prayer of the destitute and not despise their prayer. God's people right across the nation today are praying for a better day. Praying for better days. For times when there will be a great interest in gospel preaching, when there will be many loved ones and others too that will be converted, but there's so much fear. So much fear, and perhaps unconsciously in God's work we could limit him. That is why it hasn't been easy here in any church, any of our congregations, and here we're trying the best we can to get back to normality the best we can. But we didn't surge forward in anything. And mind you, it wasn't easy sometimes. We would love to have been had more things going quicker, but we're doing okay. And so far the Lord has been with us and he's been helping us, and we've asked you to pray towards the harvest weekend, even for a token for good, for a precious soul to be saved. But isn't it true that in God's work, and these are days as many, when ministers sometimes talk, and elders and so on, and people generally, these are days of sowing and waiting and praying and trying to uplift one another and encourage one another. But isn't it easy to restrict him? Just because as months go by and years go by, the whole land, instead of turning to the Lord, is going the other way, it's easy to limit him. We think of the victims in the valley. Sometimes we can limit him in the challenge of his work, but also in the confinement of our belief. In the confinement of our own belief. You think of Abraham and Moses and David. Yes, they were great men. They knew what the hills were, but they knew what the valleys were as well. And when you study their lives, if you've done that, there were times when these men were right down there in the valley and all they had to lean upon was what God had said. At all. If they were looking for feelings of euphoria and feelings of great excitement, they simply weren't there. If they were looking for what they, in humanly speaking, wanted to happen, it wasn't there. Maybe you've been like that. And you feel, well, I've been doing the best I can. And there's confinement in my belief. Not just in God's work, but on my own personal circumstances. I was reminding myself during this past week of something which is very, very important that the Bible tells us, Christian. The hairs of your head are all numbered. Try it. Try numbering them, do you see? And that simply shows us that there's nothing in your life or mine that the Lord doesn't know about. And what do we do with it? We cast our care upon him. Christian, pray. Oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear. And we do bear the pain. All because we do not carry everything to God in prayer. And sometimes that confinement of our own belief, we're in the valley. We don't seem to be able to get out of it. Look at what it says in the Psalm number 37. This psalm is about not fretting. It actually begins, "Fret not thyself because of evildoers." There's a lovely verse in verse 5 of Psalm 37. "Commit thy way unto the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. And he shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light, and thy judgment as the noonday." Then it says, "Rest in the Lord, and wait patiently for him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in the way, because of the wicked man who bringeth wicked devices to pass." Do you see the word rest at the beginning of verse 7? You and I know about resting in the Lord and in prayer and resting in the Lord's day in the Lord, but that word rest that is translated rest there, it literally means be silent to the Lord. Now, not in prayer, but be silent to the Lord. And it shows me, and I'm speaking to me personally, that in the valley, whether it is doubt or disillusionment, whatever it happens to be, easily I could blame him. Easily I could turn and say, well, look at verse 7. What about those who prospereth in the way? And I'm fretting about them because their language is filthy. Their lives are corrupt. They're completely godless and they're always laughing. And they have everything. And I'm just going to blame God. Well, here the psalmist is saying, rest in the Lord. It means be silent to the Lord. And that was a lesson to me. It was a lesson to me when it comes to the confinement of my own belief. I mentioned to you Abraham and David and Moses. Sometimes these men had to do that. Yeah, like you and I, sometimes they complained anyway. But there were times when they had to just do that. There's a very important verse I want to turn with you before we leave this point. It's over in Isaiah chapter 50, please. And this verse, in two verses actually, is a lesson to me and to all of us. We're still thinking here of the victims in the valley, and we're looking now at the confinement of our own belief, how we might confine God, and how we might restrict him in our personal lives. Verse 10 says, "Who is among you that feareth the Lord?" The word "feareth" there means respect or have standing awe of. You love the Lord. You know who he is and what he's done for you. "That obeyeth the voice of his servant." So you're coming along to God's house. You're seeking to live the word. You're living in obedience, as it were, and doing what you can. "Who is among you that feareth the Lord, that obeyeth the voice of his servant, that walketh in darkness and hath no light?" Walketh in darkness and hath no light. And then it says, "Let him trust in the name of the Lord and stay upon his God." And then it goes on to say, "Behold, all ye that kindle a fire, that compass yourselves with sparks, walk in the light of your fire." And these verses are emphasizing to us that there is but one light. God is light. And in him is no darkness at all. And verse 11 would point to those who have a worked up situation, their own fire. And it says at the end, "And in the sparks that ye have kindled, this shall ye have of mine hand, ye shall lie down in sorrow." There's no sorrow. There's no sorrow in looking to something else. Sorry, no joy in looking to something else. He is light. And these verses are showing us that there is but one light. But you're seeking to obey the Lord, you love him, and you feel you walk in darkness, and there's no light. C.H. Spurgeon, one of the best known preachers of all time, sometimes his valley was so dark that he thought he was never going to get out of it. Here's a man who saw thousands, was used mightily of the Lord. He thought he was never going to get out of it. And maybe, again, there's some of us today, and at times we think we're in that valley and we're doing the right things. You're in all the meetings and you're loving the Lord and seeking to obey him, and behind your smile you're walking in darkness and you feel that you don't have any light. Well, the answer is there. Let him trust in the name of the Lord, because he's the Lord of the valleys. Christian, he's in your valley. Let him trust in the name of the Lord. I can't answer what his purpose is. I don't know. And why you're walking in darkness perhaps at this time, I don't know. But I know that he is the God of the valleys. He proved that to not only the men I mentioned earlier, but he's always proved that to his people. We're the victims in the valleys. There's a confinement of our own belief. There's the challenge of God's work. But then we think of the changing power of the gospel. It's good when Christians love the gospel and love to hear it being preached, and we all do. But when not many are being converted, One of the greatest tendencies is the thought, something's got to change. Something's got to change. Usually the message. And then it's all downhill from there. Because your responsibility and mine is to preach the word. You're part of that because you pray for the preaching. I have to do it. Gladly do. And so do some others here from time to time. But isn't it true that as the years go by and the months go by, and those that person that you're holding on for, maybe a neighbor or a loved one, they haven't changed at all. The gospel doesn't seem to make any difference. There are a percentage of Christians today, and zeal is almost gone. Witnessing is non-existent. Expectancy from the Lord isn't there because of the valley. The valley in not only Northern Ireland, but the United Kingdom at the moment, where it seems that God's cause is is going down. It's going down. Well, it's not. Because God is God of the valley. Now, that is, I trust what I've said about the victims in the valley, that it's been a word to your heart, certainly been a word to mine. And we all identify with what we said in some way. But notice, please, secondly, then, the victor in the valley. You see, there's no Christian and there's no evangelical work that is ever in the valley on their own. Because the Lord has promised that he will never leave his people nor forsake them. So Christians, above all people in the world, they have liberty at the moment here in Ulster to preach the word and to share the word. But we must remember this, inner personal valley, inner valley in the work, inner valley when it comes to the state with which the situation with people responding to the gospel, they're generally not responding positively. When it comes to all of that, remember that he is here. He is with you, Christian. I mentioned, I don't think it was last Wednesday night, maybe the Wednesday night before, that you are a child of God. You are blood bought and heaven bound. God cannot overlook you. Big decisions to make in your life, he'll not overlook you. He will give the direction, and it's up to you whether you follow or not. Please don't let flesh judge you, judge that. People have made decisions, and it has been the flesh or a reaction. It's all going that way. Slowly but surely, it's going downhill. He will direct you if you will have him direct you. But remember this, in your valley, the Lord is there. He cannot overlook you even in the little things. And that encourages me because I've always something that I want to talk to the Lord about. I'm sure you have as well. But he is the victor in the valley. Whenever the apostle was writing to the church at Rome, he used himself as an illustration and spoke about all the different problems he had. Then he said, nay, in all these things, right in the midst of them, in all these things, we are more than conquerors. Why? Through him that loved us. Through him that loved us. The victor is on your side today. The world may disappoint you time and time and time again. But remember that the Lord, Christian, is with you. Not far from the place where the Syrians had suffered setbacks, the Lord Jesus spoke with a woman at the well. I'm just going to turn to it. You needn't worry about turning. I'm going to read one or two verses. In John chapter 4, many of you know that story of Jacob's well and how he met there with this woman. And in John chapter 4, interestingly, in verse 20, she says, our fathers worshipped in this mountain. Now it's called Gerizim. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. She's referring to the hills. Is it the hill Gerizim, or is it Jerusalem built on a hill? And then Jesus saith unto her, woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship you know not what. That was a word personally to her. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship him. Yes, and we've preached in this verse or this passage about this woman being converted to Christ, and that is a good passage to preach from. But here's a word to all of us. When Christ is showing her that it'd be neither in this mountain nor in Jerusalem, because God is the hill of the valley, the God of the valleys as well. How do you worship him? You worship him in spirit and in truth. And Christian, when you're down there in that valley, you can worship him there. Harder, but you can worship him there. And more than that, he seeks you to worship him there. It says in verse 24, God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. Don't turn aside to other things. Don't look for some other kind of uplift. I say this respectfully today, but talking to family members and other people who have now, well, now they have now left a lot of social media, and they've talked about how it almost become a curse, an addiction. And their whole life revolved around getting on the screen and being there as much as they possibly could. And the way out of it for them was simply to leave it all together. Why were they on it? Because you saw things sometimes, or you read things, might give you a little lift, it might be encouraging. I'm not saying you don't look at it, but don't let it become your God. Remember what we read back there about walking in darkness and having no light? These are children of light we're talking about. And then he went on to talk about man-made light with sparks there. Walk in your own light. Christian doesn't have any other light, only God's light. Facebook is not light. It may be informative for you when you need it. That's up to you. But I'm sure there are some who will know exactly what I'm saying. He's a victor in the valley, and he is there, Christian, with you today. Please remember that. We've noticed the victims in the valley. Our title is God of the Valleys also. The victims in the valley, then the victor in the valley, and finally, victory in the valley. If you look again at our text this morning here in verse 28, 1 Kings chapter 20, you will see the verse sets two sayings and oppositions. God of the hills and not of the valleys. And then what does God say? See, God's way is so often different from what man would have you believe that it is. It says here, "And therefore will I deliver all this great multitude into thine hand." In other words, I'm going to show them. The Lord will show them that he is, yes, he's the God of the hills, but don't think you've outflanked them in the valley. And Christian, in your valley experience, there can be victory there. At AFAC, on the plain, he gave a very decisive victory. Look at verse 29, "And they pitched one over against the other 7 days. And so it was that in the seventh day the battle was joined, and the children of Israel slew the Syrians and 100,000 footmen in one day." Now, did you remember what Israel looked like? Verse 27, two little flocks of kids, just a joke. Well, verse 29, it wasn't a joke. Because it says there that they slew them, but the rest fled to Aphek into the city. And there a wall fell upon 27,000 men that were left. Who would have thought it? Who would have thought it? Not even Israel would have thought that. But you know, God's ways are not our ways. And when you're down there in the valley, sometimes you're trying to claw your way out. We have responsibility. Of course we have. But trying to claw your way out, remember that God's way is perfect. And so often his ways are not our ways. Here is a wall. Here was a wall. It was really the final nail in the coffin at that time. And Christian, in your valley and in mine, let's try not to feel so much like victims, but to lean upon and look to continually the victor. The victor. Reverend Johnson emphasized a couple of nights there when he was bringing us into the tabernacle proper that about the importance of the laver. And then there's importance of going in for those who went in there. And he brought before us all the importance, and it was mentioned several times during the importance of you and I seeking the Lord and looking to him and lean upon him, because he's in the valley with us. And then victory in the valley. If you and I look out in the world today, we don't know. We've got the gospel, we share it, we invite people in, we do the best we can, and that way we preach the best we can, and then we wonder, month after month after month, the world goes on heedless. God's working out his purpose. He could raise up some person that seemed to be insignificant, and he could use them to bring great honor and glory to his name. When 1859 revival came, there were some people who knew how to preach that you needed to be saved, but when you got saved, they didn't really have enough experience to help you along. But the Lord used them mightily. He used them mightily, and the word that they had, they preached that people needed to be converted, and they were in the scores. And then there were others who were able to help the new converts. God can use you. And he may raise up maybe a young woman to go away and be a Mary Slessor. Think of Mary Slessor as a really lovely girl, nice personality, and you know, she's really bad temper, but mightily used of the Lord. And I trust the Lord will help all of us to have new confidence today in him, to labor with expectancy, to love the fellowship, and to love the place wherein his honor dwells. I remember one of the elders in Dungannon, the late Abraham Nelson, when I was just converted. Every week he used to pray in the prayer meeting, "Lord, we love the place, O God, wherein thine honor dwells, the place of thine abode, all earthly joy excels." We heard all week that God wanted to dwell among his people. And he's in the midst, and he's in the midst still. I trust he'd encourage you today and help you on your hill experiences and your valley experiences as well.